You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's style is very unique, where he shares the message of the gospel unlike anyone else. It's real, refreshing, focused, and fun. Whether you find yourself in a good place, maybe in a difficult place, or possibly even in a very lonely place, let me encourage you that you've come to the right place. Now, if you're not able to stick around with us for all of today's talk, you can always listen to, download, and even share this entire message with a friend right from our website, richardellistalks.com. So, with today's talk, here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Say the Blessing. I've done some dirty pool on this before, large family gatherings, Christmas, Thanksgiving, somewhere, and they think I'm going to say the blessing for the meal, and I'll pick out a new boyfriend, son-in-law, whatever they turn out to be. Well, why don't you say the blessing? Man, you talk about some sweating. Anyhow, don't recommend it, but it is pretty funny. So let me read you a few prayers here before we get into anything serious. Dear God, this is little kids. Dear God, my mom tells me that you have a reason for everything on earth. I guess broccoli is one of your mysteries. Please make my parents understand that if I don't eat salad, I do better at school. Please forgive me for hiding my sister's favorite doll, and please don't tell her where it is. Dear God, I need you to make my mom not allergic to cats. I really want a cat, and I really don't want to ask my mom to move out. Wow, there's an honest prayer. Dear God, when will my sister stop being annoying? I'm down to my last patience. Dear God, please don't let it rain on Saturday. The first ball I hit will be for you. It's a good prayer. Dear God, I hope my dog is with you in heaven. Please take care of him. Sorry if he chews on your sandals. Man, that one kind of got me. A little boy's prayer. Dear God, please take care of my daddy and my mommy and my sister and my brother and my doggy and me. Oh, please take care of yourself, God. If anything happens to you, we're going to be in a big mess. Turn to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6, verse 11 is part of the Lord's Prayer. So the disciples say to Jesus, teach us to pray. And this is what he comes up, what we call, some people call it, our Father. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as in heaven. And then verse 11, give us this day our daily bread. So if this is a no-brainer prayer, and look at the word used, it doesn't say provide us food. Give us this day our daily bread. So implied in this is, it is a daily prayer for daily bread. Okay? Now, what is so tricky about abundance is if you don't need anything, you stop asking for stuff, and then you also stop thanking God for stuff, unfortunately. People who need daily bread need to pray daily for daily bread, for something to show up. I mentioned we did a homeless deal, guy that runs the ministries in the room, and handed out over 500 turkeys, boxes, all this stuff. I think, you know, just a lot of food. And I asked him, we were sitting there watching this distribution. I said, what percentage of these people do you think that were driving through this assembly line really need it? He said, well, you know, I don't know. Food banks have a hard time knowing how many people really need it. But I can tell you this, some of them really need it. And when you wake up and you say, Lord, give us this day our daily bread, and then out of nowhere you see a food bank line, something going on, and as a mom, as a dad who's trying to feed a family, you go, there's my answer. How in the world could you ask for daily bread and then God provides you daily bread and you not stop and say a blessing? Look at Matthew chapter 14. This is Jesus feeding the 5,000. It's very fascinating. I'll tell you why I think this, but let's go to verse 19, Matthew 14, 19. Then he commanded the multitudes to sit down on the grass, and he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looked up to heaven. Now this, if you don't stop thinking about this stuff, it doesn't hit you the way it hits me sometimes. But so this is Jesus, God in the flesh. He's got these 5 loaves, 2 fish, and he looks up to heaven. Like, who's he looking at? He's God. He looks up to heaven. He blessed and broke and gave the loaves to the disciples, and the disciples gave to the multitudes, and boom, it multiplies. I mean, is he talking to himself? He's talking to his Father. what is this about? He is modeling something to his disciples. You say, well, Jesus had the power to do what he did. He didn't do anything he didn't see the Father doing. This isn't some random thing. So even Jesus looks up to heaven, blessed, broke, and gave the loaves to the disciples. Here's another one, Luke chapter 22. Now the context of this is Jesus before he's crucified. Last Supper, they're about to break the bread, drink the cup. Luke 22, 17, then he took the cup and gave thanks and said, take this and divide it among yourselves, for I say to you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God comes. And he took bread, gave thanks, and broke it, and gave it to them, saying, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. So feeding the 5,000, I got a feeling that wherever there was food, Jesus was blessing that food. He was saying the blessing. Somebody was blessing the food and giving thanks for basic stuff. Go to Acts chapter 25. Now, this is a story about Paul. He has been arrested. They're trying to kill him. In Acts 25, 11, he says, for if I'm an offender or have committed anything deserving of death, I do not object to dying. If I deserve to die, I'm not against dying. But if there is nothing in these things of which these men accuse me, no one can deliver me to them. And then he says one of the most powerful things that a Roman citizen could say, I appeal to Caesar. A Roman could say those words and everything stopped. That meant that person had to be transported to Rome to be presented in front of Caesar himself and be tried. He said, I appeal to Caesar, and everything stops. Now go to Acts chapter 27, verse 1. Now I'm not going to read you this whole deal, but now it comes time to transport him, the logistics on transporting Paul by ship, land and ship, all the way from Israel to Rome. Well, read the first 27:1 at least. And when it was decided that we should sail to Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to one named Julius, a centurion of the Augustan regiment. So entering a ship of Adramyttium, we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coast of Asia. Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, was with us, and the next day we landed in Sidon. So the ship goes from port to port, island to island, port to port. They keep moving. Winter's coming, and it's getting tricky. The winds are contrary. Go down to verse 10, and he says, men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and ship, but also of our lives. But they keep pushing. They keep pushing, trying to make it to Rome. Go down to verse 20. Now, when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and no small tempest beat on us, all hope that we would be saved was finally given up. We're going to die. But after long abstinence from food, then Paul stood in the midst of them and said, men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss. And now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only the ship. For there stood by me this night an angel of God in whom I believe, in whom I serve. And this is what he said. Do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar. Now you say, well, how do we know that Paul actually made it to Caesar? The angel told him right here. And indeed, God has granted you all those who sail with you. So now he's communicating what the angel told him. Therefore, take heart, men, for I believe God that it will be just as it was told me. However, we must run aground on a certain island. Now, when the 14th night had come, as we were driven up and down in the Adriatic Sea, about midnight, the sailors sensed that they were drawing near some land, and they took soundings, find out how close they are, then go down to, and you say, well, why are you reading all this to us? I'm getting there. Verse 30, and as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship, when they had let down the skiff into the sea under pretense of putting out anchors from the prow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. You got to stay on board. Then the soldiers cut away the ropes and the skiff and let it fall off. And as the day was about to dawn, Paul implored them all to take food. Now, think about this. You're on this ship, storm. If you had sound effects in the Bible, I'm looking for the scratch and sniff Bible myself, where you get to a page and, oh, I wonder what that smelled like. Oh, shouldn't have scratched that page. But if you had sound effects, this is intense. This ship is about to run aground. They could all die. So in the middle of this, And as day was about to dawn, Paul implored them to take food, saying, "Today is the 14th day. You have waited and continued without food and eaten nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take nourishment, for this is for your survival, since not a hair will fall from the head of any of you." Now, in the midst of this storm, he's telling them to eat. And then verse 35, "And when he had said these things, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then they were all encouraged and also took food themselves." Now, what in the world? Why is he stopping to bless the food in the middle of a storm where they're about to die? They heard him speak to God, giving thanks for the food. Simple stuff. Don't miss the simple stuff. Because if you don't do the simple stuff, I've talked before about, what's his name, John? This is a football. Lombardi. Vince Lombardi. Do you know what he'd do? Professional football. First day, first of the season. He'd get in front of the whole team. These are some of the best football players in the world. And he'd hold a football and say, "What? This is a football." "What, are you an idiot or something?" "Of course we know it's a football." What did he start with? Basic things. What am I talking to you about today? Basic things. You start leaving off the basic things, and sooner or later, you're not doing any of the things. Now, while I'm on this blessing thing, here's how this dominoes. And if you ask my wife about this, it took me way too long. I'd pray with the family, with the kids, but praying with her, whew, man, the devil let me preach 1,000 sermons before he'd let me pray with my wife. And if you don't think it's real, you just try. One of the most vulnerable places a man can ever be is praying out loud with and for his wife and family. Because what the enemy will tell you is, "What? You? Dude, God knows you, but we know you too. We know all your stuff. You got a lot of nerve. What are you going to say? Make up some stuff? We know what's in your head. We know what's in your heart. We know what you really want, and it's none of this stuff you're saying." Now, this is not always true. But if you can't pray for food, there's a good chance you're not talking to me about much else, unfortunately. You say, no, I have a quiet time. It's going to back in the other way then. You're not going to be ashamed of him. You're not going to be ashamed to be seen. You say, "Well, I don't want to make a scene." We're not talking about making a scene. There's nothing in here about making a scene. And I'll read you some verses where I think this all originates. So if you keep reading this story, they shipwreck on the island of Malta, and the people of the island help them, getting them food, and they're building a fire, and Paul reaches his hand in the fire and a snake bites him, and they all think he must be a murderer, he deserves to die, but he doesn't die, he doesn't swell up. They're going, now he must be a god. And a guy on the island named Publius, his dad is very sick, fever, dysentery. And he asked Paul to come pray for his dad. His dad gets healed. Everybody on the island who was sick came. They all got healed. And they were stuck on the island of Malta for 3 months. Now, I'm going to take a second and say something that's not just about prayer here. Recently, a couple called me. The wife, I've been talking to her. She's in trouble. Marriage is in trouble. And I said, "Well, see if your husband would be willing to come in and let's sit down and talk." He said, yes. Miraculous. He said, yes. They come to see me, made an appointment. I didn't have any appointments made after it. After 3.5 hours, they left that room with me. Diane, who runs the office, poked her head in there. I think looked around the corner to see if I'd been taken hostage and were holding me for ransom. Now, why am I telling you this story? You never hear of a surgeon. "Well, ma'am, this, you know, we're going to do the surgery. It's about an 8-hour surgery." 8 hours? We don't have time for that. Isn't it interesting how we're never shocked by surgeons who take 3 hours, 8 hours, 12 hours trying to save your life? Now, here's where I think this has gotten nuts. This is Paul the Apostle. He's stuck on a ship that's shipwrecked, literally shipwrecked, bit by a snake, survives that. God protects him. Some guy, Publius, his dad, he's dead. We already know he's dead now, but okay. So he gets healed. A bunch of other people get healed. And Paul is stuck on this island for 3 months. What kind of time management is that? Aren't we supposed to be seeing people every 15 minutes, get through as many as we can? "Well, ma'am, this should be like a 5-hour surgery. We're going to try to do it in 30 minutes because I make more money that way." You don't want to hear a surgeon saying that.
So here's my encouragement to you. Slow the thing down. We are in such a hurry to get to the next person, the next thing. What happened with that couple, and I believe they'll end up married, it took 3.5 hours because it took 3.5 hours. And you go, wow, you shouldn't be spending your time that way. Not until it's you in trouble. Why would you give people that much time? It ain't my time. It's his time. So you wake up and you say, okay, Lord, this is the day you have made. I'm going to rejoice and be glad in it. And here we go. I yield my life to you. And you get in a situation. Now, I'm not saying go to work and steal from your company by counseling people at the office. But I'm telling you, sooner or later, you're going to get somewhere and it's going to cost you some time. And you're going to have to listen. And it's going to take a minute. And it's not fast answers. The old man that changed my life gave me two things, at least two things, time and truth. And nobody had given me those things in that combination before. He had time for me. He cared for me. He was not trying to get on to somebody else. Let God decide what productive is. Let God decide what success is. Do the simple things, talk to him, listen to him, walk with him, follow instructions. And I promise you, it's not always pleasant. We fast as a church one Thursday a month. And this last time we did it, man, Wednesday night, oh my gosh, I was not happy. I think I ate enough for like 3 days, just, you know, getting ready to fast and talk to Jesus, you know, whatever. I was upset. I didn't want to fast this last time because it's not pleasant. Telling your flesh no is not pleasant. And then my flesh started screaming at me like, oh, you're going to fast? Oh, let them do that. You know, you don't have to do that, except that you're trying to be a leader. So it's not always pleasant. I did not die. I woke up that Friday morning, had my Captain Crunch, and it was all good. So go to Romans chapter 1. And before I read you this one, let me tell you one other thing. That little homeless thing, the feeding the poor thing, I showed up at that, thought I was going to be there just a little while, and like 2 hours something later, I hadn't left, and I had some good conversations, prayed with some people. But there were some people there, one guy in particular, that I know he was there serving, and this is how this works, and you need to pay attention to these things. He showed up to serve for 4 or 5 hours, and I know kind of what he's worth per hour. So he was not working in order to serve at that event. So it cost him money personally, not necessarily because he gave cash. He lost cash being there. So when you give Jesus your life and you tell someone on a day that you might have some time for yourself and you say, look, I'll meet you on a Saturday morning, and then it takes you 2 hours, but you could have worked Saturday morning and made X amount of money. At some point, you got to say, Lord, I'm going to lose money serving you. And he's going to say, what? I've been taking care of you for a long time. Don't trust that money. Trust me. Let me use you. The money's easy. Getting you to let me use you is the hard thing. And we figure out if we work so many more hours, we make so much more money, and do what with it? Do what? I'm going to buy something. You don't even want the crap you got. Romans chapter 1, verse 18. Now, this Romans chapter 1 thing has been circulating in my head a lot because a ton of our trouble comes back to this very place. Romans chapter 1, verse 18, and you have to read the rest of it before. I'm not going to take the time to do this, but it jumps in here. It says, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. So the truth is there, but they suppress it. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. Please remember this when you're sharing the gospel with people. This is not certain people on the planet. This is every person who's ever lived. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them. You know there's a God from the inside out. You're made in the image of God. It doesn't make you a Christian to know this, but every human being knows God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. Somewhere along the way, he has said, I'm real. There's a God. I'm him. and he has manifested himself to you as a human being. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. And I get this question a lot. What about all the people who've never heard? They don't know about all this. They don't exist. They don't exist. You say, but what if they've never heard about Jesus? Let me tell you how this works. If you acknowledge God and you respond to him manifesting himself to you, he will show up. He is not limited by where and how he can show up. Muslims all over the world are having dreams. Jesus showing up in their dreams. An angel can show up. A missionary can show up. You can show up. That seems to be the hardest thing to get to happen. They are without excuse because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God. So they knew God. Number one, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful. Simple stuff. But became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. And then it goes kaboom down the toilet from there, and God turned them over to a debased mind. It goes downhill, just flush it, it's gone. You didn't glorify God, and neither were thankful. Simple stuff. You're God, I'm not. I thank you for what you've given me, what you've provided me. And ultimately, when you really get it, and Jesus does show up and somebody shares the gospel with you, you got something to thank him for. I don't even think I don't know how heaven's going to work completely. I can't imagine making heaven, and part of the praising is not still thanking the Lamb. How do you stop not just praising the Lamb, but thanking him for his willingness to die, be buried, and raised from the dead? Because I got nothing without him in that. So, I'm encouraging you to say the blessing. Now, I know this can get very rote. I've heard some prayers like, Father, you know, make us thankful for these and all our blessings. For Christ's sake, amen. And that's the same prayer, and I ain't knocking that prayer. I heard that prayer a lot in my life. But if you're going to have a conversation with him, have a conversation with him. And especially if you've got children, teach them to pray. Teach them to be thankful, to thank God for simple things like food, like clothing. For years, I remember praying with the girls. We lived not too far from this building, the convention center, up in the hood, where even people that lived in the hood wouldn't come see us. And at night, I remember praying with all the girls, thank you, Lord, for a place to sleep, a safe place to sleep. For food to eat, for taking such good care of us. And if we saw a homeless woman, a prostitute turning a trick under a trailer somewhere on the way home, and pray for that woman, protection for her, somebody's mama maybe, somebody's sister, somebody's daughter, where are they gonna learn to pray? Start with a meal, go to the next thing.
Before Richard comes back to wrap things up for us today, I'd like to share a couple important things with you. Let me encourage you to take a minute and check out our website, richardellistalks.com. You'll find today's talk right there in the Talks page, along with all of Richard's messages. You can even forward them to a friend so they can hear them too. You'll also find the prayer wall to add your prayer requests, a link to connect with us, the contribute page for you to be able to give to this ministry, a radio station finder, all our social media links, and much more. So check it out, richardellistalks.com. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
And maybe of all the things I've said, pray with your wife. God help us. Your marriage is in trouble, pray with your wife. It took me way too long. It's pretty sad, actually. But I'd be hard-pressed to leave my house anymore without grabbing my wife in my arms and thanking God for her, for food, for clothing, for our home, for all of our children, and whoever else I feel led to pray for. That'll change your life. So the last, say, the blessing is this. It's out of Numbers, actually, chapter 6, verse 24. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.
Thanks for listening today to Richard Ellis Talks. We're confident that the program blessed you, and we want to hear about it. One way is to give us a call and let us know. The number is 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is to drop us an email. Jump on over to our website, richardellistalks.com, and click on the Connect tab at the top. We'd love to hear from you. And while you're there at the website, there's a ton of great stuff there just for you. Things like all of the talks from Richard, a prayer wall where you can leave your prayer request, and a whole lot more. Check it out, richardellistalks.com. Finally, we love doing this program for you, but we're so grateful when you hop on board to help us with the cost. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD, or you can contribute through the website. It's easy and much appreciated. 855-6-RICHARD or richardellistalks.com. Until next time, God bless you, and thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.